Welcome to the Healer's Corner podcast with your hosts, Melissa Wiles and Maria Serna.
So tonight's topic is sexual healing and spiritualism. And Alexa is actually, this is more her field that she is more familiar with. I know a little bit in the energetic point where I can, if I have a client that's coming in and they're having some issues with their relationship or they're having some problems, you know, with not being able to be heard, I can do it in the energetic perspective. But that as far as I go, I never really sat down and just saw the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm fortunate that one of the kind of adaptations on divination and tarot reading that I work with is about sex, sexuality, some of your romantic expression and things like that within the body. And one of my favorite readings now, don't get me wrong, I love tarot cards. I'll flip over a card any day. But being able to actually have my divination pieces and my little throwing bones on my lovely little anatomical Venus mat that I have in front of me, and then having my clients throw little gemstone vulvas and little gemstone penises, that interplay of like their energy adding to it, what I can bring as far as a gift, and then what we can actually see that comes up physically and emotionally there, has been an amazing, amazing doorway into sexuality and sexual health and things like that as a topic. I think it's definitely one of those topics that we don't talk about enough, because it, at the end of the day, it's a health topic. It's our body. Mm-hmm. It happens inside of you and to you and with you. So there shouldn't be shame around this type of topic, but inevitably there is. And I do want us to kind of like keep that in mind as we go forward, that as you're watching this, everyone's journey is going to be completely different. Everyone's relationship to sex and sexuality and how they express that is going to be completely unique and completely individual to you. So if you have comments, questions, thoughts, please feel free to pop them into the comments. We love those. But yeah, this is ideally a very safe, open space to talk about things and to kind of just discuss a couple of different topics that definitely come up more often than not when you're talking about sexual healing.
Could you give a brief of what is sexual healing if someone has no clue what it is, basically?
So sexual healing is, it's very similar to kind of augmenting your diet. If you had a doctor diagnose you with some sort of health concern that a specific catered diet would benefit that towards you, sexual healing is like a specific diet for your body and your mindset. And it comes in a couple of different ways. It comes with not only the mental part of it, of being able to actually confront traumas and abuses and things within you that are still kind of being held up. It happens energetically with actually being able to kind of free some of those blockages within yourself. And then it happens physically, being able to actually shamelessly enjoy yourself in your expression of sexuality without a lot of the mainstream stigma and shame surrounding all of it. So I've always looked at sexual healing as it's basically a diet, but for your sex and your sexuality and your fulfillment of those things, because everyone's diet is different. Everyone's expression is going to be a little different there. And I feel like the diet analogy gives you the opportunity to kind of pick and choose which aspects of it will fit for you and yourself and your body.
So basically it's a non-performative way? Or could you elaborate more on that?
Yeah, so there's a bit of a difference between the performative act of sex, which is great. We love that. Everyone, you know, go have fun. There's a difference between the performative act that we as humans sometimes engage in when we are with a partner, or when even when we're by ourselves, we have this kind of bizarre, almost unreachable expectation of what we think we should be doing, what should feel good and shouldn't feel good, what brings us enjoyment and doesn't bring us enjoyment, what we feel is average, normal, and expected of us based on all the influences around you, like, you know, social media, health classes, the books you read, the family environment you have. And it's kind of all of those things go into sex. That's not just like, yes, at the bare bones of it, it is two bodies or more doing things, but it's not that. It's a compound of all of these different aspects of your life kind of culminating in one moment. So you have to get away from the performative aspect of sex. And when performative, I mean by your ego is going to have to take like a backseat really hard. Because there's a lot about, there's a lot of things about sex and sexuality and things like that. It's such an interestingly visceral topic. It is, granted, it's a very emotional topic for a lot of people, and it can be a very emotionally intimate and energetically connective thing. But even just on the physical side, on the very black and white, kind of no emotion involved side, it's a big, awkward, clumsy thing, and it can be gross at times, and it can have different smells and sounds and tastes and sights. And it's engaging all of these senses around you all in this one act. And that's an extremely overwhelming place to be, regardless of what you're doing, when all of your senses are able to kind of hone in on that one spot. To get away from the performative side of that, though, is letting yourself be in that moment, letting yourself be in that mindful moment of, you know, what I'm hearing, what I'm tasting, what I'm seeing, what I'm smelling, what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what physically is happening mentally. And it's just letting yourself be there without having an expectation. You have to get rid of an expectation, because a lot of times, especially with sex and sexual performance, we all have this weird standard or this weird, like, hidden level of expectation that we have to meet. Oh, why wasn't this enough? Or I didn't do this enough, or I didn't do this. And you have to get rid of that expectation, because that brings the idea of sex and sexual healing into your body as something completely in the moment. It's not something, you know, you can plan for, or you can always look back on things, but it's not something that you can build the template around, so to speak. It's very much in the moment.
Mm-hmm. I know that the energy for the sexual energy is a very high potent type of energy. You know, and it just the energy aspect of it, not the physical, but the physical things that are happening, but is the energy aspect of it. So where does spirituality plays, or is that the spirituality right there, the energy of the sexual energy?
So I think that boils down to the different labels you kind of want to put on what sexual energy is for yourself, and what you can apply to it. Like, 'cause we think about some like modern examples in a lot of our spiritualities and a lot of the more pagan side religions. Like, I know the Wiccan side of the pagan tree there, a lot of their sexuality and a lot of that sexual energy comes in the category of like fertility rites. It's very binary in that idea of a masculine and a feminine presence, and the pelvic bowl of a woman that houses her womb being representative of the cup, and this idea of filling the cup and then it boiling over with life and newness. We have that kind of aspects. We have some religions where sex is completely removed from the equation. You don't entertain those parts of yourself because you've chosen to take that energy and route it somewhere else. So there's definitely a specific type of energy that is just I would call sexual energy for sure. And it's not just an energy you have just during sex.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. It's not kind of like I can have romantic energy, or I can have very mindful energy while I'm doing other things. I don't have to just be in the act of something physical or intimate to be able to engage that sexual energy and actually harness it and use it and tap into it and let it flow and let it kind of do what it wants to do in a body.
Okay, that brings to mind. Since it's a high potent type of energy, is the energy that you can bring out your creativity?
Oh, absolutely. Especially for, we see this with a lot of women, that the a new word I've seen in several different books is this idea of creatrix. And it's the idea of stepping away from the very binary idea that sexual energy for a woman is just for fertility and blooming and following her menstrual cycle, which is a completely valid path of sexual energy. Absolutely. That's mm-hmm. actually part of my 2026 goal, is to pay more attention to my natural cycles, to see what my energy is doing in those flows. But we see that in the creative sphere, in the form, in the category archetype of creatrix, this idea of this is a well inside of you. This is a place where, because physically the amount of nerves you have there, because of the ability you have to contribute to life within those parts of your body, whatever parts you have in your pelvic bowl, that creation energy is what you harness into creative energy. And it comes out in a myriad of different ways. You know, painters, writers, sculptors, whatever creative outlet that you do, a lot of times is linked to how regularly you're kind of stimulating that specific muscle group and that energy and getting that energy to keep flowing forward. Because it wants to come out of you. It shouldn't sit there stagnant. And you can tell when it gets stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
I've had several readings where that kind of stagnant energy inside of you, and I know you can speak more to the energy side because this is the side that you get to see a lot of. It's almost like somebody has a dam built in part of them, mm-hmm. that things are trying to like get up and out and around, and they just can't. Is that something that you see a lot with your clients, as far as like
I see it with some of my clients. Yes, I've had a client who were, let's put it this way, she was in a relationship that she did not longer want to be a part of. So I noticed the energy. There was a stagnant in there. So I literally had to clear it out. So yes, the stagnant energy, sometimes if you want, it's like a cord. Also, you can have a cord, an energy sexual cord with another person, even though the relationship is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a stagnant. So I literally had to go and clear it out, you know, and it's just an energy cleansing because it's energy. So I just do an energy cleansing and I just remove whatever the residue was. Because as far as this person was concerned, that person was out of her life, but there was a residue still.
Still had that tether.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's that stagnant energy of if you don't give yourself spiritual palate cleansers in between certain relationship marks, in between certain dynamics with people and things like that, that energy can become stagnant, and then it kind of sticks. And then you run the issue of it affects other aspects of your body energetically and then also physically. Like I've seen several clients where we'll throw the divination pieces down and we'll be looking, and some of the heavier, sharper pieces in my divination tools will end up in that pelvic bowl. And I'll have to talk to them about like, okay, well, what, something's in there and it's heavy and it hurts and it's trying to, you can tell by the placement of some of the pieces if it's trying to work its way out or if it's kind of just very much nestled in there. And a lot of the readings I get to do is just mostly just bringing attention to those parts again. bringing that person's awareness back to like, oh, hey, this is a part of you that should be tapped into, should be cared for, much like any other muscle group or any other aspect of your body and your health. So seeing those little energy blocks and that physical manifestation of those in the divination pieces has been an amazing way for me to get people to kind of visualize this idea of, here's this heavy lump of energy, and it was put there by someone else. It's a result of a trauma, of an experience, of past history, of you getting ready to break out of something or trying to break through something. And having them be able to kind of physically see that in front of them, I watched so many people's little light bulbs go off of, oh, you're right. Okay, I should do something. Like, this is something. It makes it tangible. It mm-hmm. literally is giving a physical representation to the untangible energy. Because there are some people that struggle with visualizing energy movement. There are a lot of people that always struggle with tapping into energy and understanding what that feels like in themselves versus what that feels like to other people.
Okay, you brought up about trauma. How does shame play a role in that? Because that person may not be aware of the shame that has embedded, as it's a trauma that they just carry on as they move forward in life.
Shame is one of the biggest factors, I would say, in sexual healing. Simply because we are raised in a culture and society where inherently there's already so much shame and stigma around sex and sexuality. There's double standards across that expression between men and women. There's over-sexualization on one end of the spectrum. And then there's this almost like purity culture end of the spectrum where, again, someone gave you an expectation. At some point mm-hmm. in time through your growth, the friends you've met, the people you run into, how you experience sex and sexual acts with other people, you form an expectation of what you should be doing. And it's failure to meet that expectation that shame takes over. And shame says, I did bad. Bad me, shame on me, it's not good. Or I'm wrong for liking this, or I'm broken or dirty, or there's something icky and gross about me because I find these things pleasurable, enjoyable, fun. Shame is such a potent killer of energy work in a lot of aspects. And I love in a lot of my readings where I get the opportunity to show them a space where you don't have to feel ashamed for liking something. You don't have to feel ashamed for saying things to me, because it is not my place to judge. It is not my place to tell you where on that expectation you fall and I think you should fall. Because my opinion about I have no expectation of you. So I get to hold a space for someone where I get to set up for them an environment where I go, as long as what you're about to say doesn't have anything to do with non-consenting activities, say it. And watch me nod my head and accept the fact that those words just came out of your mouth. We get this weird idea with shame and with sexuality and like some of the things that people enjoy. Because we almost forget that it's like, from an objective standpoint, it's with other consenting people. It's with other consenting adults. And quite frankly, if everybody in that room has agreed that this is what we're doing and we're all okay with it, then okay, you checked it off the list. That's it. Move on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the control aspect that comes with sex and okay. the fact that it can be a activity that can be used for leverage and control and to hurt people in very acute, real, long-term ways. And that control is hard, because when we perceive that we are not in control of it or somebody else has control over it, it kind of strips us of our autonomy. So there's so many different facets. It's like a very multi-cut gem almost. Like I feel like I look at a diamond with all these different facets when I talk about this topic, because each little part has its own area of importance, but it all, you have to zoom in enough to see it, but then you have to zoom out enough to go, oh yes, the whole, the beautiful rock that you are.
Would you say that the church does play a conditioning role in that too? And then, oh, I can't do this because my church would frown on this, or, you know, on that shame?
Absolutely. There's a lot of, especially with the Judeo-Christian culture, where a lot of that platform has been pushed in the direction of using sex and sexuality to control women mostly, and putting men in a place where their sexuality is a weapon to be used against other women or in comparison to other men. It's disgustingly toxic all around. But the traditional, like, Judeo-Christian church views and the idea that your sex as a woman, both physically the body parts and your ability to do these things, has some inherent danger. Because why else would they be afraid of it? Why else would there be fear around? Like, okay, if you're controlling something, it's because you deemed that it was out of control, and it being out of control meant it was dangerous for something. Well, okay, let's look a little closer to that. What was the church trying to control? What danger were they trying to mitigate? And the danger they were trying to mitigate was that the fact that we don't naturally form patriarchal or matriarchal, we form very interconnected, balanced, dual leadership roles in communities, and we're meant to do that. That the energy that comes from the feminine side of that creation, of that nurture, of that community building side is just as important as the action and the doing and the physical side of the energy. And the church has definitely been used as a platform to kind of keep people in little boxes and really make them feel that, oh, these things that you're feeling or thinking or wanting to do are wrong and are gross and you know, should be taken control of, which is why we see purity culture is such a big deal in the Judeo-Christian side of things. That idea of you have to promise your amazing gift that you can only give away once. Like it's a token of, you know, mastery or whatever. And you have to promise it to someone else. Most of the times being promised to a father figure or a minister figure of some kind, some sort of male authority figure usually gets it. And again, I look at that of like, we have a whole generation of people that were taught this was normal. It's okay that you give that part of yourself up to someone else because it's not yours to hold. And when you're doing that, you are very realistically, energetically telling someone, I'm giving you this energetic part of myself to not be able to tap into, to not be able to have access to. And you've given it over to someone else. And that can be so detrimental to people. Mm-hmm. And they don't even realize that it's a culture that they've been raised in, or don't even realize it's something that they deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah. I do agree with that. I don't understand the purity mentality or practice. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Because when you see a person, a child, is trying to figure out their own sexuality, and then you're putting all these rules and regulations, that child just feels like, I can't do this. And they get smaller and smaller, and they disconnect with their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And they go through life, you know, I can't talk about this. I can't say anything. Mm-hmm. The family, the friends, you know, or whatever community, church community they belong to, they're like, I can't talk about this. Yeah. So it just diminished them. It's just pretty much, it gets to a point where I feel so sorry when I have come across some clients and I realize, oh my goodness, I had a client, you know, and he never had an opportunity to do this. And he moved back to the family home with his two siblings, mm-hmm. and could not express himself. I felt sorry. I think to me that is worse than being in a prison. Mm-hmm. You can't express yourself. You don't have the freedom to do that. And I don't even think he realized it. I don't even think he got to a point that he realized it. And he just did a lot of things when they were not home, or explore a lot of things when they were not home.
Because mm-hmm. that was the only time he could.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of safety is an inherent part of sexual energy. Just because it does deal with parts of our body and parts of our anatomy that inherently, during sex and sexual acts, of course, you're putting yourself in a very vulnerable position. Mm-hmm. You have no clothes on. You are not paying attention to the world around you. There's, even from a biological standpoint, it's a very vulnerable position for any animal to be in for any length of time, which is why a lot of times in the animal field, it doesn't last very long because they're still worried about survival while they're doing it. There's a level of safety mm-hmm. that has to be conferred in sex and sexual energy, which is why they've done, when they do studies, that, and I say they as in like the scientific community, when the scientific community does studies about recreational sex among other like large mammals, so like bonobos, dolphins, they have noticed that it correlates with like the safety of how well fed is everyone? Have there been threats to the territory lately? Like they're watching these trends happen like they would with normal people. Like, of course you wouldn't feel any sort of creative or any sort of outlet if you're more worried about survival and feeding your family. Mm-hmm. Like I read for a client a couple weeks ago, and she came in and she said, I'm just not sexual anymore. There's nothing there. I'm numb. I'm kind of mute, like wet clay. And I said, okay, well, let's dig into that a little bit. And so we looked, and at first, you know, I always approach that with, okay, well, let's talk about just you and your relationship to your sexuality. Do you feel comfortable talking about these things? Do you feel comfortable using these words? Are there certain topics you don't want to talk about with me right now? We did a couple card readings, and I realized that the problem was not necessarily within her, because when I had her throw the divination pieces, all of what I usually use as like my trauma indicator pieces had all scattered out. Her pelvic bowl was completely empty. And that's usually a good thing. I'm like, okay, that's usually a sign that like, okay, there's nothing blocking there. So now we just have to, you know, open the tap and run with it. And come to find out, it's because a lot of the frustration and the things that she was dealing with in her external life were impacting her ability to feel like a sexual being. You know, working through relationship issues. I think she was a poly person, had children at home that she was taking care of, didn't have like a supportive, you know, co-parent with them. Like all these different factors, you know, stress at work and things like that. And through the reading, we kind of talked about all these different other little pillars. And when I kind of laid them all out and pointed them out to her, I'm like, well, yeah, no wonder you don't feel like a sexual being. You have a million other things going on. Your central nervous system is turned on. It's activated. You don't feel safe. And safety is part of sexual expression. You have to feel secure and safe in the environment around you, in the people you're sharing it with, and kind of just within yourself to be able to kind of have some of these expressions very safely and securely. And that safety building, I feel, is something that is so easy to give other people. In my opinion, it's very easy to make somebody else feel safe. Because you've been in situations where you don't feel safe. It's an icky, gross feeling. It's awful. It's terrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And if I always look at it as, it's my responsibility as a practitioner and as somebody who enjoys sex and sexuality as an avenue for self-expression and healing, it is my responsibility to make sure that you feel safe with me. You need to feel safe and secure with me. You need to know that I respect anything that comes out of your mouth. You need to know that there's no judgment here. There's this lack of, again, lack of expectation on my part. I have no expectation for you. And it's in that safety that a lot of people come. I mean, Maria, I can't tell you the number of strangers that sit across from me for 20 minutes at a time and just tell me these amazingly complicated, beautifully woven, just intricate, bizarre aspects of their entire sexual life. And then look at me like, okay, now what? Like, I'm so privileged that I get to hear about this. One, thank you for that trust. But two, okay, where do we start? Because it's important to feel safe. It's important to feel safe in your own skin and in your own environment. And like you said, like that, the client you saw or the client that I saw, they hit a complete almost roadblock because they did not have an environment with which to feel safe in. So of course they're not going to feel energetically stimulated. They're not going to want to do whatever creative outlet it is that they typically enjoy, because that energy doesn't have a way to get out. It's literally cut off.
Mm-hmm. And that is really a sad thing when you notice that in people. Would you say that the first step in healing is, first of all, being aware of it and then forgiving yourself?
Yeah, the forgiveness is the part. I mean, being aware that you have something, and that's the other thing that's hard, is that especially when it comes to sexual trauma and things like that, unfortunately, the way our society is built, that there is a lot of opportunity for victim blaming. And there's a lot of opportunity for responsibility and accountability not to be put where it needs to be put. So already you have people walking around with something that they feel is not right. Like they've been wronged in some way and they have to address that. That's compounded by the fact that maybe the thing that happened to them was a more taboo subject or something that was less mainstream or less okay to talk about. So then you have people that think there's something inherently wrong with me already on top of now this incident wrong with me. So you have this kind of double hurdle to get over for yourself of recognizing that there's nothing wrong with you fundamentally. You are okay. You're human. But being aware that this is something that has pervasively affected the rest of your life, the rest of your time, your energy, your existence. And then giving yourself permission to re-experience it in a safe way. Because I'm the type of practitioner, I believe, with especially with trauma and hurts and things like that, you have to go through those again. Life is a spiral in that regard. You have to find a way to rehash, reface, reconfront, redeal with some sort of safe, structured way in which you get back into the same kind of pie slice I view. If you're thinking about life as a spiral, the thing happened here, but we're here now. Okay, you still got to get back to that pie slice somewhere and re-experience it in a safer way, giving yourself permission to do it again and going, this time's going to be different because I'm in control. I made the choice. And that level of empowerment can be so important for people. Because again, that shame, that stigma around if something has happened to you in any way, shape, or form regarding sex, sexuality, or things like that. And you in some part of your brain goes, yeah, something about that whole situation wasn't right. Like there was a wrong thing there. That shame starts eating away at you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so pervasive. Maria, when you deal with clients, does shame as an energy feel different in a body?
Yes. 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 I always see the light diminishing, and I think it's really nice when they hear it from someone outside of the family and friends. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Okay. This happened. And sometimes they're not ready to bring that into awareness. Whatever happened, however they felt shame for or whatever. they're not ready yet. And so when they're, and I, you know, as an empath also, I feel when they're not ready. So I have to just do it in small little chunks. I have to remove it in a small little chunk. And I start noticing that the releasing part of it when a person is start, the tears are crying, when they're coughing, they're purging, they're getting relief. I do have come across clients who's tired of being sick and tired. So they're ready. They're ready to just get rid of everything. So, yes, I mean, it's really, as a practitioner working with energy, I can feel the dimension. I don't know exactly what it is. As I'm in that healing mode, as I'm in that healing energy, I get information. I did a distant healing on someone, and it got to a point where this person was, I knew that if I didn't step in, this person just kept on going downhill. But it happened back when this person was younger. And then you would think, you know, when this person say something to someone within the family that, but do not say that again. Do not talk about it. Do not. So the more of that shame just kind of build. So it was actually gratifying to see the energy shift. I did it distant, but I saw each time. I couldn't just go in there and just scoop it all up. I would have loved to do that. But I was like, no, this doesn't serve anymore. Let me just take it all. But I knew I had to do it in small chunks. And each time I stepped into this person's energy field when I did a distant healing, it's like there was a shift. There was a change. It became lighter. There is a certain consistency to shame. There is a smell to it sometimes. And it's just like I could smell the energy of deep-seated anger, And there is also a smell to shame, you know? And it's just a very light, how do I put it? It's like a little chunk of something, like a fruit that was left in the sun and slowly.
Yes. Almost it's like that overly sweet reverging to like something's like if you weren't and I'm so glad you said that too, because I think that's such another interesting visceral aspect of healing is again that it engages all of our senses. It's not just a it's not just a one track thing. Because I had an experience a couple weeks ago with someone I walked in the morning, walked into this person's room and looked at them and kind of, you know, how was your weekend? Oh, that's good. Like, you're lying. How was your weekend? And he's like, can we go to lunch? Yes, we can. Okay. And it was a shift of energy. It was feeling the shame on him when I walked into that space and knowing that he was carrying something he so desperately wanted to get rid of. And carrying that kind of heavy weight on himself. And we started talking and he was kind enough to share with me that his partner that he was with at the time was shaming him for liking a certain type of, I don't know how to euphemistically say the word porn other than just porn, but that kind of adult media consumption. His partner was shaming him for the interests that this person had. And of course, the first thing I established with them was like, well, again, as long as it's consensual, you no judgment for me. I don't care what you do. And the shift that happened when I explained to him that there's nothing you're going to say to me right now in this moment, barring of course, like non-consensual things you do with children, animals, absolutely not. But again, if what you are doing with yourself is consensual or with other adults is consensual, there's nothing you're going to say that I'm going to be like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Because it's not my place to judge. When I gave him that platform and that freedom of like, hey, you're safe here. If you'd like to share this, you can. He immediately followed up with, oh, and also my partner's hitting me. And that was the shame that he was dealing with. It was the shame as a man having to admit, I'm a victim of domestic abuse. And that shame, and oh my God, it was an amazing, it was like the top layer of shame crumbled in a little bit and I saw it. I was like, oh my goodness, that, but it was that shame. It was that sensation of something has happened to me and I don't know how to admit it. I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know what to say. Because it's not exactly something that you can casually, like, over the water cooler at, you know, your lunch break. Like, hi, how are you? What's up? Like, that shame plays such a huge factor in anyone's journey of healing. And I like the fact that you also had said that you pulled out little pieces by little pieces rather than kind of going in and scooping it all out at once.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's almost like reminding me of thinking of people as buildings in progress. You have scaffolding and you have wiring and plumbing and you have certain floors and drywall that's going up. If I knew there were bad pipes or bad floors or a wall that wasn't going to support, it's going to be more damaging to the whole building if I go in and knock all that out at once.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to take just this little wall down and then rebuild that wall. And then once that wall is good, okay, then you can turn around and go, all right, let's deal with the piping over here now. Like, you have to take healing in increments that you can stand. You can't approach healing, especially with anything with like sex and sexual trauma. It is not a one stop. I'm going to get this done in one therapy session and one energy session with Maria and I'm good to go. No, it's going
no. time. And also, I also know that if the healer takes it all in one scoop, we don't know what kind of consequences the client is going to pay a price for. We don't know if we are going to add more of that trauma. So in a safety way, we take it in small little chunks, you know. And also each time I did it, that little bit of rotten fruit, started getting less and less and less. The smell of it started getting less. And the heaviness of, because any kind of negative energy that you're carrying around, it is a big burden. It is a huge burden. And I also notice when that burden is starting to get less and less and less. And their energy is just illuminating. They starting to, you know, you're going to see a huge, big change on this person. You may not see the person. It was really gratifying when I had a client who came in. And as a healer, I know I did what I could do for this client. And I don't expect feedback. It really is nice. You know, we're all practitioners. We like to have some kind of confirmation that we're in this, doing this for, you know. She came back a year later and I did not recognize her. I did not recognize her. She was and she was going, I know you see a lot of people and she go, giving you my name, it's not going to mean anything because you do see a lot of people. But I came to you in a state of my life that I was dealing with a lot of, I thought there was something wrong with me, you know, and I came to you not by choice. I had friends who brought me there and I just decided to try it. And she go, what you have done? I said, thank you. And yes, I do not. I see so many people. I don't remember. But I said, now that you have, she said, a year ago, I kind of place you now. I go, you were dealing with so much, so many emotions. And she go, yes. And she go, I thought there was something really, really wrong with me. You know, and it was a relationship that she was getting over.
There are a lot of remnants of relationships that I feel people don't give themselves enough time to fully close up and heal. And we as conscious people have to be very mindful of when those things need healing in ourselves, we don't inadvertently use another person to kind of fill that void or to try to rework through some of those issues with that other person, which is hard to do. It's hard to be inherently social and communal creatures that humans are and want connection and care and to know that there's someone with you and you belong, but then to inherently not have that trust or have that trust repeatedly broken and have no foundation of how to build it. That's hard to do. So I definitely, I like the fact that throughout this entire conversation, we've talked about shame and safety have come up several different times as far as like what you can do. And the fact that, yeah, so many people walk around thinking there's something wrong with them. And that's, that feeling of otherness is so deadly at times. One of my favorite analogies for people is to let them know you're not a weird horse. You're just a zebra with different stripes. Because getting yourself out of that mindset that there's something inherently wrong with you because of the things you like or do or engage in. Again, we're comparing ourselves to an expectation someone else gave us. Somebody else told you, oh, it's not okay for you to think that. Oh, it's actually, you don't talk about stuff like that. Or, oh, you don't do that. That expectation was given to you very carelessly by someone. A lot of times it's a offhanded comment that someone makes or a facial expression that someone pulls that person might not even be aware that they just did, but the person observing them went, oh, I said this thing and this person I kind of like made a gross face, so that must be gross. I'm gross. Oh, okay. I won't ever talk about that again. It's such an offhanded little thing that expectation was given to this person and now it weighs so much heavier on them. And it's a mindfulness of your actions. It's an accountability for your actions. That your words, your facial expressions, your presence in a room with people has an impact. And you can't ever really be sure of who's paying attention to which parts of you or how important you are to someone or the impact that you might accidentally have on them. That's not something you can ever control, but it's something to be aware of. And I think that awareness, especially with sex and sexuality, is important because it's how you care for each other. It's how we show compassion for people. If we are conscientious of the fact that, oh, you're going to share something really vulnerable with me, then yeah, I'm going to put my phone down, face down away from me. I'm going to hold your hand for you while you talk to me. Like, showing up for someone like that is a profound step in healing. Being able to talk about things like this candidly is another profound, profound step in healing, because there's so much silence around it.
The other thing that I always tell my clients, and I say, know the boundaries, know your boundaries, because that is something that we are not taught in society. We are not taught. It's never discussed, you know, so we don't know the boundaries. So you put the shame, you put the expectation and the shame, and then you don't know your boundaries, or you don't know that, okay, this I can accept, but that I can't. So it's like, I was like, wow. I go, you didn't, I had a client. I said, you didn't know that you can say no. It's two letters. No. Just N-O, no. And it's something that we're not taught in society. No. You know, it was never discussed. And I don't know, it's like people think that there's a handbook and that we all know what this handbook is, and but it's really I wish the children that are growing up would be a good discussion for them to know that there is boundaries, to know there's nothing wrong with them, and don't compare yourself or expect to be that person. Yeah.
And this is why I'm so excited that Melissa's going to have us in a couple of weeks be able to talk about kink and BDSM in the aspect of sexual healing and things like that. Without jumping topics over there, but there are so many amazing conversations you find yourself capable of having when you start giving people enough space to say, do you actually like it when I do this? Or does this actually feel good? Or what do you like? Like, those simple curiosity questions and those simple fact-finding questions to get to know someone and get to know what they like. Because I cannot tell you the number of people I have met where, you know, we have a discussion and we talk, you know, oh, soft boundaries, hard limits, like that. Oh, I have no boundaries. You can do whatever. Like, nope. We are not. Absolutely not. Because that puts everyone in a dangerous place. That puts everyone at an at-risk place. And it's going to be so much better and happier and easier if we go through the awkward, uncomfortable conversation of, well, I kind of like it if you do this, or actually, I don't like it if you do that. And not having, again, worrying about not meeting an expectation. Because in especially with sex and sexuality, we are bombarded with so many different avenues and aspects of what is and is not sexy and attractive, and what should and shouldn't feel good, and what is and is not acceptable. And then you sit around and tell people, oh, well, this is the standard. Like,
no.
8 billion people on this planet. There is no such thing as a standard across all of them, I promise.
Just like there's no such thing as normal.
Normal.
There's change.
Correct. Yeah. You are a zebra. You are a zebra with different stripes. Sometimes you are a zebra with little itty bitty fine stripes. Sometimes you're a zebra with big fat stripes. Sometimes you have both. Sometimes you're a zebra and you're born with spots first, and then they change stripe, and that's okay. But that idea of belonging and that idea of being othered definitely plays a shame factor, plays into the shame factor of any sexual healing that I've gotten to be a part of with other people.
Also, I think that's another thing that you brought up about communication. In society, we're not taught to communicate.
Correct.
We're not taught to have a say, you know, especially in the relationship aspect of it.
Yep.
You know, you want so much to belong. You want so much to have someone there to do things with, to go out with, to eat dinner with. And sometimes I said, okay, I go, that is great, because that is, I go, as humans, we need the interaction. We need that. But I would like you to bring the interaction and get to know who you are, your boundaries, that it's okay to talk about things. And if that person is not okay to listen, then you need to either make a choice of, do you want to continue, or just, you know, move on with someone else that's going to listen to you.
So often see people willing to sacrifice their own self-comfort for belonging. And that's so hard, and that's so tragic. And that's, again, circling back to the fact that a lot of the Judeo-Christian churches use that sense of belonging as a way to control and as a way to kind of manipulate certain expressions of, well, of course you want to take a purity pledge. All the other girls are doing it. Well, of course you want to sign this pledge that you're not going to have sex until marriage. Everybody else is doing it. And it's, again, it's that manipulation of something that is inherently yours and no one else's, that somebody went, oh, no, but it's mine, actually. What if it was mine to control? And it stripping that autonomy away from someone is so detrimental. But I see so many people willing to sacrifice what should be their own boundary, whatever little red flag in their head that went off that said, you should say no to that. Because we are taught in society to get along, to minimize ourselves, to not take up space, to not have a say, to make somebody else uncomfortable and say no. Like, it's not fun when someone says no to you, but it's necessary.
Yeah. And sometimes it's actually, you should be able to say no also.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to have that power to say no. No, I don't choose to do that. I don't choose to go there. I don't choose to whatever. The one thing that I have always said to clients who have gone through a breakup, and you know, and as practitioners, we do have questions about, do you see me with someone,
yep.
or do you see
yep.
me when you? Okay, so I said, what I zoned into the past relationship. I said this, and I always tell them, I go, a relationship is supposed to be like this, not like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, in order for you to, I would like you to take this time to go out to a movie by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Something you want to see.
Yeah, date yourself.
Go to a restaurant and eat by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know? And I can't do that. And I said, why not? There is no rule set in stone that you have to always dine with somebody in a restaurant. There is no rule set in stone that you have to go to a movie theater with someone. Why can't I just can't do that? I've always had someone with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, try it. Just amuse me. Just try it and see how that feels. You get to pick your movie. You get to pick whatever you want to eat and see how liberating and the freedom of that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's baby steps. I did have a client did that baby steps. And she said, oh, my gosh, I liked it. And I go, good. That's, it's supposed to be enjoy. You know, you enjoy yourself.
And so, I think that's a huge part of sexual expression is enjoying yourself. Mm-hmm. And we are taught and conditioned to not be very open and loud and kind of proud of the things that we find enjoyment in. Like, I genuinely, and it's taken me a long way to get here, I like myself now. I used to hate myself. Myself and I had a horrid relationship with each other. We were constantly, I genuinely like my own company. I like being alone. It's fun for me. And mm-hmm. I've bridged that gap of being, I can be by myself because I enjoy being by myself. I can enjoy being with people. I can enjoy being with lots of different people. I can enjoy being with one person. And it's knowing where in that spectrum of enjoyment that you fall.
Mm-hmm.
Are you somebody that can give yourself permission to, oh, actually, yeah, I am going to take myself out to dinner. And you know what? I'm going to have dessert first.
Mm-hmm.
Those little acts of reclaiming are so important to autonomy and so important to, I think those are kind of the more unexpected ways that you can kind of get energy to start kind of flowing back out around the edges. Mm-hmm. Because you're letting people kind of find releases in different areas and they don't realize that they've kind of let off steam a little bit in one direction.
Yeah.
Or they've kind of started the trickle that's going to precipitate the flood.
And then what was really nice to as practitioners when we start seeing our clients being empowered in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just themselves as they, who they are. They're actually empowered to every aspect of their life, especially when they have gone through a breakup, when they have ended a relationship, however it ended. And they are, you know, I was an I before I became a we. And I always said, I go, you were an I before you became a we. Let's go back to the I.
Yeah.
You know, and see how much you have grown.
Yes. And I think that's the other thing that keeps so many people away from sexual healing is because inherently it feels very selfish, and it is selfish. And a lot of people view selfish as such a negative word that it always has a negative connotation. Selfish does not always have to have the negative connotation. Mm-hmm. Selfish is a word that means self, me, just for me. No one else, no one else's permission, enjoyment. I'm not meeting anybody else's expectations. Sexual healing is selfish inherently because it's about self-enjoyment. It's about what's good for just you. And that's a really hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, especially if you're somebody that's been conditioned to be the caregiver of the family, or you have children, or you parts of yourself are constantly being given up to other people. Then sex becomes almost a luxury you can't afford because you don't have any left, any pieces of yourself left.
And that is so true. I mean, with everything that's going on in a person's life, I always tell my clients, first of all, I don't care if it's like 20 minutes by yourself. Get to know who you are. You are a mother, yes. You are a wife, yes. You are a partner, you are. But don't lose yourself in that label. I don't like labels, you know. So I said, don't lose yourself. You were an I before you became a we, or, you know, an us. And I want you to remember that.
When I do relationship readings, especially if I've got like a couple in front of me, I'll do a spread for each person. And then I do a separate spread for the relationship. Because you two have your own, or three, or however many people are in the relationship, but you have your own things to attend to. Mm-hmm. The relationship should be treated like a separate entity. And then you both yes. attend to it, but you have to attend to yourselves.
Yes.
You are very much an I, but you collaborate on the us or the we part, but you still have to have a solid I.
Yeah. Because that's the foundation. In my opinion, that is the foundation for anything to build, whether it's a relationship, raising a family. You have to have that foundation, and you are the foundation to yourself. Okay, guys. Yes. Thank you for joining us. Okay. Good night.